Today is November 7th, 2010, and I want to say hello to those sitting in front of me and to the many hundreds or thousands who are listening across the big world. It's been a sad weekend, it turned out for me. I found out right after Shabbat that one of my colleagues passed away minutes before Shabbat, and I want to dedicate the Shayua to Rabbi Dr. Aaron Batt. I know that your generation doesn't recognize the name, but Aaron Batt was one of a kind. Ehrlichkeit, London, dedication. What an individual. He's the fella I've told the story, I write about it in my new book, with the Rav and the chemistry. He was the chemistry major whom the Rav consulted why there's wax floating on top of his cup of tea. And Aaron Batt went on to get a doctorate in chemistry. He was a Tells Yeshiva boy. Again, you fellas don't realize that Tells High School in the 50s was considered the best yeshiva high school in the United States. Today it's nothing there. But we had a lot of good students who came after high school, and Aaron Batt was one of them. We used to say about Aaron Batt and about Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein that these were two individuals, the two Aarons, who never wasted a minute. They were always in motion. Aaron Batt was so happy to be able to go to college, and yet he wanted to hold by learning. He never, ever wasted a minute. He was just something special. He came in Aliyah perhaps a year after we did, lived in Haifa. Came to Yerushalayim, was the Menahel Klali of Machon Lev for many years, then the Menahel Klali of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. He put it into a computer program, and he was such a magnificent individual. Left a Dor Yesharim of Rach, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. With great tragedy, one of the tzaddikim killed, the Merkaz Harav was his grandson. And the pain in my heart is very great, because that Shabbat, that grandson, I believe his name is Yehonadav, had spent with his grandparents, and Motzoi Shabbos, I can still see him. We had the minyan in my parking lot, Motzoi Shabbos, Motzoi Yantav for Mariv, and there's on the side is Aaron and his grandson, and go and dream that that week he would be killed in Merkaz Harav. So, Mechir Gadol Shilamnu Kan. And I want to dedicate the shir to his memory at Tzadik Yehei Zichro Baruch. Now, last week we spoke, you know, this problem which we'll come back to again and again, particularly today. Here you have a literary forgery, and here you have so many people who believe it's real, can't believe that someone would write the name of the Rush and be lying. That it's not the Rush. Take the name, you know. We're not talking about Rabbonim of today's era. Today's era, all right, there's Machloikit, but we have this Rav apostles this Rav, and this Rav apostles this Rav, but here we're talking Yishrein and Kamalachim. And people will take the, well, why are you sitting, Lenny, why are you sitting in left field? People, here we're talking Rishonim Kamalachim Kedoshei Elyon, and take a look that the Rush, the Rashba, you'll see some of the names that are assigned to the Tshuvah. How can someone tell a lie? And of course, this was the Tshuvah. Rabbi Avadya Yosef was a magnificent Tshuvah, where he deals with the whole question of suicide and saying Kaddish for suicide and eulogizing a suicide. And he quotes the Besamim Rosh, Rav Shaul Berlin, and Rav Shaul Berlin, as we'll see, not today, but later on, had a very lenient attitude towards suicides. I'll explain it in detail when we hit the Tshuva. And Rav Ovadia goes into a whole discourse, can you depend upon the Besamim Rosh? And he quotes Rav Zevin, and ultimately reaches the conclusion that it was not the Rush, it's a literary forgery, but we accept the thoughts that are written, not supposedly who said it. And in other words, if it's a good Sfarah, so it's a good Sfarah from Rav Shaul Berlin, not the Rush.
What's amazing is Rav Avadja also quotes his own Rebbe, Rav Avadja Hadaya, the Yaskelavdi, that he accepted the Besamim Rosh as being from the actual Rosh, and that it's not a literary forgery, but it's accurate. And nevertheless, in the Tshuva Halacha L'Maisi, reaches the conclusion that if perhaps we have the concept or the feeling or the chush that the person who committed suicide felt bad at the end, moments of death, he chazab tshuva, maybe he was psychologically deficient, so you can sit shiva, it shouldn't be a pagam mishpacha, it shouldn't be a disgrace for the family. And then he gets involved with the eulogy, and if you recall the end of the shir, I quoted the Gemara to you in Sanhedrin in, from Rav Avadja, fascinating Gemara, that I'm confusing the sugya in Sanhedrin, is the basic sugya of eulogies, Yikru Dechai, Yikru Deshichvi, that the Gemara quoted to you was in Brachot Daf Samach Bet Amud Aleph, it's at the end of Brachot, right at the very end basically, that a masper has to be careful, you have to tell the truth, and therefore to give a hesped for someone who committed suicide, better not to give. I need not tell you, for Rabbanim, this is a tremendous challenge. And did I tell you the story of Rabbi Klapperman last week, Gil Klapperman, with the hesped in his first rabbinate? He always used to tell us when we studied with him that in his first rabbinate, a Jewish gangster, a thief, died in jail. And there was new at the funeral and a big crowd, and his mother was there, she still was alive, and here he's a young rabbi and has to be maspid, a gangster. And he gets up and he gives a hesped and he speaks about the man who told him, this thief told him, that whenever he broke into a house and he saw Shabbos candles, he walked out and did not rob the house. So the hesped was based upon the fact that the thief had respect for Shabbos candles. All right, I told you my own story with the hesped I gave for that gangster who was involved in stock thievery, in forging dollar bills. I wonder what type, must have been $20 bills at the time, and running a still in Pennsylvania. And of course my hesped, to me it's legendary what I was able to pull off, the fact that he had worked for the Mossad. And my hesped was basically for those 3 years in his life that he worked for the Mossad. And thank God, there's a whole continuity to that story, but we'll leave that for another time. Now, after having quoted Rav Avadja, I just want to make one addendum that has nothing to do with Samim Rosh, but has very much to do with Rav Avadja. As you know, on Shabbat, we were all together, we got to know each other, so I met Ephraim again, and I met his wife, and my wife and I were just overwhelmed by his story, and you know, you fellas from the big free world cannot appreciate what it means that Ephraim is sitting here learning for Smicha. What I find overwhelming is that Ephraim owes me a thank you, because the person who made him from was the chief rabbi of Moscow, Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt, and the person who inspired Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt to get involved with Russians when he was a teenager was someone named Aaron Rakefet. So we've come full cycle. So Ephraim tells me that last night he was at Rav Avadja's shir, and one of the questions Rav Avadja dealt with, and it's in Harnof. I thought it was still in the Bukharin, but evidently it goes over by magic to the Bukharin and all over the world. But it was in Harnof, and a friend tells me it was at the Shia, and one of the problems that Rav Avadja discussed was in Russia, communist Russia, you had to walk around with identity. If you didn't have identity, they could arrest you on the streets and throw you into the gulag. That was communist Russia. I believe in Israel, technically, there is a law that you're supposed to walk around with identity on you, but it's not enforced as far as... Excuse me? No, it's not enforced. I remember once there was a case where in Machne Yehuda, this policeman was having a fight with this salesman there, and he said to him, show me your identity. See, I can arrest you, you don't have identity. And the papers wrote it up, he was threatening him. So Rav Avadya, you have identity. Knew what do you do Shabbos? So if you recall when I gave a lecture on Malkar and myself, our involvement with the Mossad in Russia a number of years ago in the Kollel on a Shabbos, I gave a Sheyur. So I said one of the big halachic problems I had to face, because from 1980 on, I wound up being the posek. Until then it was Chaim Kedrukman, and then when the Mossad touched me on the shoulder, I wound up with that responsibility. So here we have, over the years, 200 people going to Russia, and the problem of what do you do with your passport? If you leave it in the hotel, you're finished. Chana Zemer, do you remember Chana Zemer was the editor of Dvar, big Zichron Lerocha, big Mapainik, you know. She was briefed by the boss and told, don't leave anything in your hotel room, carry it with you. But she thought she's the editor of Dvar, she's a socialist, she's a communist, she doesn't have to listen to the Mossad. So of course, one day after she got to Russia, they robbed everything from a hotel room. She was totally grounded for the next week, couldn't do a thing. When she was getting on the plane, they brought her back her passport, said, oh, some honest Russian found it on the street. So now, what do you do, Shabbos? So there were two solutions. One solution was to put it in your foot. That's lavud. Lavud, within three tvachim, it's not considered carrying. The other solution is put it above 10 tvachim, which the average human being is, and that's considered reshut haptur. It's not considered reshut harabim, reshut hayachid, and then you have to go in with other cheshbonot. Do we have reshut harabim b'zman hazeh? Do we have 600,000 people on the streets, etc., etc.? So the hat you're looking at, this was the hat. This was my father's hat as a postman. It's a Royal Mountie hat made for the post office, so very warm hat, which I inherited from my father, who had just died before we went to Russia the first time in 1980. And here, Ephraim, is where we had our passports, right in here. You see? Right in here, and on your head, and that way if you were stopped on Shabbos, you stopped, you didn't walk, and you showed the KGB, this is my passport, put the hat back on, and continued walking. And I jumped for joy when Ephraim told me 25 minutes ago, a half hour ago, that's exactly what Rav Avadya paskin lahalacha, keep the passport in your hand. So Baruch Hashem, we mentioned Rav Avadya, and Ephraim told me about last night. Okay, Ephraim, could you believe it?
My father did that when we started going to shul.
Beautiful, in the Ukraine.
In Moscow,
okay. So here's the hat from Moscow, and that's what my wife put in. And that's where we kept everything. And that's what I told people, the halakha l'maisa, if we were sending, what to do on Shabbat. Yitzrubin, if he had been here a minute ago, we would have heard from him already what he did on Shabbat. But I found putting it into your shoe was much more difficult, because it's hard to walk when it's in your shoe. But putting it into your hat was a lot easier. Yes, Mendel.
If it's in your shoe, do you have to keep your foot at a relatively low level? Does it have to remain?
No, if you walk normally, you're never going to go above three tvachim. Who goes above three tvachim while they're walking? Figure it out. Figure three tvachim. It's normal. You don't have to do anything. Okay. Now, I want to go further. I want to go further, and I want to show you something amazing, and I want to show you a problem that haunts us and will haunt us as long as Jews walk the face of the earth. Remember, I showed you that last week for the Summer Rosh, this is a Xerox of the original edition published in 1793, and I got this at the Hebrew University Library, and here you have the explanation where he got it, what he calls it, and then you come, and we're picking up new material now, then you come to page 3, and he has two haskamot, one from his father, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Berlin, and one from the Nodeb Yehuda. Now, I have to tell you something. They're gedolim and they're gedolim. You understand that every generation, people believe this rabbi, that rabbi, and it's good. These are rabbanim, these are the leaders. Yiftach bedoro, Kishmul bedoro. I have my problems on a personal level. It's a different story. I saw the Rav. To me, the Rav, if you talk about a gadol, it's the Rav. If my Shafayim see, I have a difficulty relating to some people from the new generation. Nevertheless, Yiftach Bedor, Kishmul Bedor, and you have to relate and have awe. Nevertheless, over the millennium, certain names rise to such proportion that the only word you can use is that, if I can quote or paraphrase the Chazon Ish in the Igeret, there's Hashgacha Pratit here, that these were not just Gedolim, they were towering figures through whom the Mesorah moves. Now, I'll give you a simple example. If you're familiar with Rabbi Avadya Yosef, Rabbi Avadya Yosef, his Bekiyot is unbelievable. He will quote Svarim on top of Svarim. If you're familiar with Hungarian Poskim, the Minchat Yitzchak, with Yitzchak Weiss, you'll see he quotes many Svarim. If you go to the Litvische Welt or the Hasidische Welt, they're much more limited in who they quote. The Litvische Welt, you take Reb Moshe, you take the Rav, when they Paskin the Shaila, they didn't quote everyone. They went with a certain logic. And they felt no obligation to check anything. I always give the example of the Malamed Laholiel in the famous question of a convert marrying a Kohen. And I always tell you where Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, Rabbi Moshe's Talmud from Memphis, Tennessee, writes to his Rebbe, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, about the Malamed Laholiel. And Rav Moshe writes, it cannot be, it's impossible, and I don't have the Malamed Laholiel, and he doesn't even look at the Malamed Laholiel. And you know, I've told you more than once that if you went to MTJ right around the corner on Canal Street, MTJ's on East Broadway, if you know downtown New York, it's a 1 minute walk. You go around the corner, there was Otsa Sfarim. Rav David Feinstein, I say Eidit Nemanah, Rav David Feinstein used to have lunch with Yankele Goldman, the owner of Otsa Sfarim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and all he had to do was say to Yankele, mein tate bet for my Malamed Laholiel, lend me a Malamed Laholiel for my father to see. It would have taken 1.5 minutes. You follow me, Eitan? It didn't enter. The same thing with the Rav. I have the Rav on tape, where the big controversy breaks out with the Kohen to a Giyoret with Rav Gor in the early 70s. The world was shaking. You fellas weren't born yet, but I remember it like yesterday. The world was shaking. And on the front page of Marav on Erev Shabbos, they're quoting the Malamed Laholiel. So some rabbi at the Yachid Kallah that year throws at the Rav, the Malamed Laholiel. The Rav roasted him in oil. The Rav finished them off. What are you quoting to me? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't. This, you know, what are you talking about? This was. But you see, even the Rav and even Rav Moshe, no Rabbi Yehuda, you couldn't skip over. A Chatam Sofer, you couldn't skip over. They somehow, the Hashgacha worked out that they rose above the crowd. Now, I'll show you the problem. Gentlemen, who has time in life? These are Rabbanim, Gedolei Torah. You can imagine what it meant to be the Nodav Yehuda. You're going to go into the rabbinate. Those of you going into the rabbinate, remember, if Aliyah is the biggest mitzvah of all, don't misquote me. I was misquoted on Shabbos. I'm not opposed to the rabbinate. My wife has a more negative attitude. I have a more positive attitude. But you're going to go into the rabbinate. You're not coming in Aliyah. You're going to be so busy. What a rabbi is overwhelmed with. And just think of the Nodav Yehuda, the chief rabbi of Prague. Nope, you got to keep learning. You have to have time to learn. You have to keep your mind sharp. You may get shilas. You have to look it up. If you call a posek to ask him a shila, I would be ashamed to call a posek unless I prepared all the material. You remember the story I told you with Roy Albert, where the Rav says to him, Rabbi Albert, I'm not your encyclopedia. Did you do your homework? Do you know the sources? And all right, so you got to work, you got to learn. You're going to find in the rabbinate, unless you black out time, you're going to be so busy you won't have time to raise your head. Now, let's assume years go by, you're now in your 50s, and you've achieved. Oh, you're prominent, you're a posek, you're a good rabbi, you have students. No, students are going to send you manuscripts. Rebbe, could you read this? Could you give me a haskama? Okay, tell me, who has time to read an entire manuscript? Just think for a minute. You're so busy. If I would show you how many books I have in my night table, they spoke about Rav Gerstenfeld died, Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld, again, you fellas, I mentioned a name. Danny, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld was a very unlucky person. He was a Lamdin Mufak, a Hungarian, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU. Everyone else was Litvish. And I don't have to tell you the tension between a Hungarish Posek. He was the YU had the only Beit Din in America at that time. Later they transferred the Beit Din to the RCA. But in Yeshiva University, there would be Gittin, there would be Chalitza. Who was sitting as I'm based in? Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld. The Litvish knew how to handle this? What are you talking about? They knew a Rav Chaim, but they couldn't deal with Halacha L'maisa. So Rav Gerstenfeld, never did he suffer. He was an Ungarisha. So I remember when he died, they were maspid him. One of the maspidim was Rabbi Louis Bernstein, Zichrono Levracha. So he was discussing on his night table the type of Sfarim they found, the English books, the Sfarim, how broad he was, how much Rav Gerstenfeld read, how much he knew, how well he knew English. And so who has time? So how do you give Haskama? I've given Haskama to a number of books. Rabbi Prusansky comes to mind, his book. I just gave Haskama to Rabbi Herb Cohn's book, other books. Rabbi Kanatopsky, the children published his, you'll see I gave Haskama. I didn't read it all, but how do you give Haskama? You give Haskama, you know the person. I know Rabbi Shmuel Przanski. I love his Hashkafas. I love his Shtakai. I love his extremism. I sign on the dotted line. So, all right, you give Haskama. You know them. Take a look. Now, I want to read. I'll read it in the English. I'll translate as I look at it. I just want you to see the famous Haskama of Rabbi Yecheskel Halevi Landau, the Noda B'Yehuda. And he writes to Rabbi Shaul Berlin, your letter has reached me. I want you to know that it's already 3 months that I haven't felt well. I've been sick. I was in great sakana. I will thank the Lord for his great chesed that he enabled me to recover, but I am still very weak. My hand shakes. It is difficult for me to write, and I will answer you very briefly. You want me to give Haskama? I made up my mind I can no longer give Haskama. It's years already. I don't have time to read, to see, and I'm very filled with pain, but nevertheless, I can change my practice. But let me tell you something. You need Haskama? Why do you need Haskama? You're producing the manuscript of the Rush. Chas v'chalila. I should have to give Haskama to a Rishon? And you went and added your commentary? Your commentary? I have to give Haskama? V'yim b'shvil ha'got v'al pilpul charifta shel kvot malat. Shebisari Hagoen Nero. He says, I have to give Haskama to you. You're a Goen. You're my relative. You're my cousin. And he says, that I should give Haskama? It's not lefi chvotcha. When Reb Moshe Feinstein issued the Igret Moshe, knew Yitzchak, did Reb Moshe have any Haskama? Chas v'chalila. Who's going to give Haskama to Reb Moshe? It's a pichut in Kavarat Torah. Rav Moshe issues a sefer. Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin issues a sefer. He looks for Haskama. Today you see Haskama on children's books. It's a disgrace. I can't believe the generation we're living in. What? The Rav issues in 44 Ish Halacha. Someone is going to give Haskama on the Ish Halacha. What are we talking about? These are Gedolei Yisrael. Okay, David Pardo issues a sefer, Chasdei David HaMishniyim. The second day he's related from the Chasdei David of David Pardo. Wow. All right. If it would be the original Reb David Pardo, Avali Rasnir Haskama. But a YU graduate, a schnip in his 40s, issuing a sefer. All right. He'll need Haskama. But he writes, and I'll give him a scummer. Why? Because I know David, I know Ariel, I know he's Elach, I know he's fine, I know he's good, I know, all right, what can I do? A Talmud asks for a letter, you have to give a letter, absolutely. You all know the letter I published at the start of the Rav that I have from my Rebbe, okay? So, but here he says, you don't need a scummer, you are a well-known gong. And something for some may know tzarich raya hal kol yodin shelo yotzi malato davesheinim etukan tachet yado. Everyone knows you're a chaver. You won't publish anything that is not perfect. And therefore, your honor is that no one should give haskama. And this is the greatest haskama to the sefer that we all know who you are. And then he writes, I apologize, but I have to end the letter here. Yecheskel Halevi Landau. No, gentlemen, is this Haskama or isn't it Haskama? And you see, this repeats itself ad infinitum. You just had it in Lakewood, right or wrong, with Rav Malkiel Kotler, with that Sefer on Hilchot Melachim, the Rambam. You had it in Israel, you had it in America. The outcry in America was unbelievable. So Rabbi Malkiel Kotler had to get up and say, I never read the Sefer, I didn't read, I didn't understand, I had no time, I just know the student, I rebbeinu shel olam. This is a real problem. But with all due respects to Rabbi Malkiel Kotler, lahavdil bein Rabbi Malkiel Kotler, and the Noda Yehuda, the Noda Yehuda, mipivan ochayim, meima vano shotim. Wow. So, is it a haskama or isn't it a haskama? You follow? And this letter, every achron, and you'll see Gedolei Yisrael, who supported the Besamim Rosh and supported Reb Shol Berlin, everyone quotes the fact that he published the haskama from the Noda Yehuda. And this is just amazing that when you read it, you don't know what you're reading. It's not a haskama. It's a beautiful letter. Halavai, I would have a letter from the Noda B'Yehuda. But a haskama, it is not. It doesn't matter. When a Gadol B'Yisrael writes, this is the equivalent of a haskama. And I'll give you a very sharp example that I'll come back to in a few years, Be'ezrat Hashem. I saw this with my own eyes, and it's in my notes, and I have it Xeroxed, and I'll show it to you, that a Rav in Brooklyn came up with an idea to solve the problem of Anguna by putting a tnai into every marriage, that the marriage is only good herb if the man does not leave the wife for more than a year, and a whole concept of a tnai. And at the start of the letter, the Sefer, it's the 1920s, you'll see a michtav from Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. And you'll see Rav Cook stationary. You read the letter, you know what the letter says? Dear Rabbi, you're an idiot, you're an amaretz, you're a boor. You're an Eini Yodeya Sefer, you're not a Yorei Chet, you don't know what you're talking about. Chas v'chalila, you should try to put this into practice. It will destroy Jewish family. Rabbanim will not know how to do it. You'll be Maber Mamzeret b'Yisrael. Rav Kook writes him a letter washing the floor with the proposal. But this rabbi was very smart. A letter from Rav Kook at the start of the Sefer. No one reads Hebrew in America. No one understands the sugya. Oh, our rabbi. He is something. Look who decorated his sefer with a letter. Rabbi Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Alright, so bear this in mind.
Now, we're a captain throughout history.
Yeah.
You had some of the greatest Gedolim that supported Shabtai Tzvi.
No, let's say that. I don't know the greatest Gedolim. There was
a famous
Machloket, but let's say that. You're right, Gedolim too. Can make a mistake. It can happen. The Shabtai Tzvi, I lectured on this years ago in the Jewish history classes. Shabtai Tzvi captured the imagination. You want an analogy? Look at the messianics with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Ribbono shel Olam. There's someone in the Shtiblach comes in with a big yarmulke. A guy in his has to be 40s, 50s, not a youngster. A big Chabad black hat underneath the big yarmulke. Yechia Donenu Moreni Rabbeinu Melech Mashiach Lomved. If you don't get that, he's wearing 3-4 Mashiach pins. Have you seen the gold, beautiful Mashiach pins? Boy, this guy walks in. Tell me, can you count them for a minion? I doubt it. Wow, this guy.
There are many
wonderful Lubavitchers. They're now sitting down as we speak. I think, 4,500 people at a Sudat of the Shluchim in New York, the work they do. But I'm told that these Shluchim, 90-95% walk normally. I was at the Rebbe's funeral. I can only tell you, if they were carrying out an empty coffin, they sure needed a lot of people to carry the coffin.
I serviced the Rebbe for 5 years.
You what with the Rebbe?
Serviced him.
Meaning?
I was in the home care business.
Uh-huh.
When he was ill,
okay.
So then I kept some of the stuff, instruments that I was supposed to send him. So about 10 years ago, a guy comes in, and he says to me, you get me a clipper from the Rebbe.
Uh-huh.
I said, do me a favor, get the heck out of here.
Not to say that a kribble, I don't want to go into detail, that one can be a chassid, but that the Rebbe is dead, and coming back. It's very frightening because of the Christological implications. But enough, let's come back. I don't know, I don't want to paskin, but I would feel very awkward to be canted to a minion with this guy, with all his messianic pins, with a flag, with whatnot. Abiner. I saw he said you can count it. You can count it myself. Say that you want to be Samach and Rabbi Abiner, fine. I think I understand these guys a little bit. I don't know, I understand them and it frightens me. But I'm not commenting on Lubavitch in general. It's an unbelievable movement that's alive and doing wonderful things. But unfortunately, I once explained it, it's not for now, but their whole faith and their whole kirva to Yiddishkeit, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was through the Rebbe. And once the Rebbe is gone, they can't stand on their own 2 feet. So, look, I can tell you from within. I don't know if you're aware of this. When the Rebbe was sick, the Rebbe was kept alive artificially in Beth Israel Hospital. I'm probably...
When he was home, I served.
I understand. I'm probably one of the few people in the world who saw the Rebbe on his deathbed. How did I come to see the Rebbe? The 5th floor of the hospital, or 4th floor, was cordoned off. No one could go up. The police were there. But the top doctor in Beth Israel is a very close friend of mine. So he took me up. And the Rebbe was there being kept alive artificially. On the side was his gabbai, Reb Leibel Groner. And Leibel had a place where to eat. There was always a gabbai there. It was a tragic sight, but the end of an era. You know why they kept the Rebbe alive artificially? It was explained to me. The police. The police were chayshish that when the Rebbe dies, there'll be mass suicides. They were chayshish what would happen. They held meetings with all the religious psychologists and psychiatrists, many of them my students in New York, preparing them how to handle the Rebbe's death and what they felt would happen with some of the Hasidim. And instead, exactly the opposite happened. The Rebbe died Saturday night, the funeral would be on Sunday. When the Rebbe's death was announced Saturday night, they started drinking L'chaim, the Rebbe's in a higher world, and he's not dead, and he's now going to watch over us. And that messianicism began literally that night. Instead of suicide, it went in a very different fashion. Now, is it better for the Jews, good for the Jews? Obviously, at least these people are alive, and we hope we can be much beyond them. Okay, now, the other Haskamah, of course, is from his father. The Haskamah from his father does not carry the same weight as the Noda B'Yehuda. The Noda B'Yehuda Haskamah, that is what everyone quotes. Then you come to the Hakdamah. And the Hakdamah is very, very fascinating. I just want to summarize it for you. What did he call his commentary on the B'Samim Rosh, on what he claimed were the Rosh's Tshuvot? He called it Kasatahasana. What does Kasatahasana mean? As I gave you the source last week, it's a Gemara in Beit Sittah, Tetzayin Amud Aleph, a piece of fish hash covered by flour. It was a treat, a good, like we serve in Israel. If you notice, Shabbos for lunch, I had a choice of gefilte fish, or what they call that, a burekis. They gave you a choice. No, this is good food. The burekis is like kasatahasana. It's flour on top of a potato. It can be on top of onions. It can be on top of mushrooms. It can be on top of fish. We had the schnitzel. Isn't schnitzel somewhat like a kasatahasana? Fine. Tell me. What else? Kasatahasana. So in his introduction, Rav Sherbelin says, you know why I called it kasatahasana? Hasana, Har Sinai. And he quotes the Midrashim in the Chazal that on Har Sinai, why is it called Sinai? Because that's when Sina Yarda La'am Yisrael. The nations of the world hate us because we civilize the world. So then in calling it kasatahasana, he was playing with words. It was a double intenda. Kasatahasana, a kos, a cup of Sinai, of sin'ah, of hatred. Why did he call it a kos of hatred? And here he already alludes to all that had happened. Remember Rebbe Folk HaKohen? Remember the Rav of Hamburg? Remember Rav Shaul Berlin's attack upon him? Remember Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky? I quoted to you from the Making of a Gadol that Rav Shaul Berlin was hired by the Berliners to write this terrible attack on the Lumdus of Rav Raphael Cohn. Now, I don't know. Again, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said it. I don't know whether it's correct. You know, Rav Shaul Berlin could have been anti- Rebbe Falcon, he didn't have to be hired. No one had to pay him money. He was letting off steam. I can only tell you, coming back to the Sefer that caught our attention, the Maneli Geret, I can only tell you, rumors spread that the Maneli Geret was paid for and published by an element that wanted to show up Reb Moshe Feinstein, because there was a big machlokes, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Emanuel Rackman, the whole question of what to do for Agunot, what can be done, what can't be done, and they wanted, this was the rumor on the streets of New York, that the Maimon Eli Geret, which writes so stridently and so viciously against Reb Moshe, with tremendous lumpness. And I have to tell you, in certain areas, the Maimon Eli Geret was right. I paskin certain shilas I get. I paskin like the not because it's the Maimon Eli Geret, but his lumdus is right. I know it from other sources. Reb Moshe, I feel there was some achlokes l'shem shemayim. But I don't know whether that's true. The Maimon Eli Geret wanted to show up, Reb Moshe. He was, if you read his sefer, and he has another sefer that came out later, you can see he was frustrated. He never achieved the recognition in life. I once spoke about that in the call. Didn't I start the Shayurim HaKol Talui B'mazal Afilu Sefer Torah Shebaheichal? I forget already. Watch him. But didn't I quote it in class? I quoted the Zohar. So you know, in life, you got to be the right person in the right place at the right time. Some people have mazal, they're the wrong person, but they're in the right place at the right time. Other people, terrible aggravation. They're the right person, but at the wrong time. And they're people who are so frustrated. I've seen that in life. I saw it. I saw it with my Rabbeim. I write about it in my new book, what Hitler did to the Jewish people. He took Gedolei Yisrael, who would have been recognized and carried on the shoulders of their Talmidim in Europe, and put them in America where they're a bunch of greenhorns. You understand? The Rav was different. He came to America with a PhD. He was young enough to modernize. You all heard my lecture Shabbos. He was a rabbi in Boston. He had to deal with the reality of American life. So the Rav found his place in America. But you take some of the Altamira, some of the Talmidim of the Briska Rav, who never wanted to come to America, had no desire to come to America, had nothing even in an elementary school education they didn't have. Nachshon Chashka B'Torah, they learned from the time they were 13, they sat and learned day and night, and you plant them in America with American kids like us. What was America to us? Baseball. You know, my generation, my era, all the memoir literature you read, it's not like today. Today there's not that concept of a team, of the player you hate this year, your team buys him for next year. So there's no team concept. Doesn't exist anymore in baseball or sports in general. But without the clause, once they ruled 5 years and then the player can do what he wants, it's like actors, a movie's being made, so we're looking around for the best actors to fill the bill. So, but we grew up, baseball was everything. No, you have Rebbeim, don't speak English, don't read the New York Times, don't know anything about baseball. Ribbono Shel Olam, Gedolei Yisrael. But an American kid of 15, 16 has no understanding and can't appreciate. And these people were very frustrated. All right, frustration is terrible. So it doesn't mean he had to be hired. It could very well be the Manani Garrett considered himself a Gadol Shebegadolim. He was a tremendous London. And here the whole world quotes Reb Moshe. The whole world bows to Reb Moshe. The whole world cites Reb Moshe. And he came after Reb Moshe vitriolically, you know, in the introduction, and so strong, and Reb Moshe differs with Achronim, and he lists out all the places Reb Moshe differs, and who gave him permission, and then he goes tshuva by tshuva. Sometimes he's right. You don't have to say he was hired. So I don't know if Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, where he got that from. It could be it was a tradition, could be not. But I'm willing to say Reb Shaul Berlin wrote the B'Samim Rosh, and wrote his attack on Reb Raphael Cohen, who was an opponent of the Berliners, wasn't paid for it. He did it because he was in that camp. He was frustrated. He wanted to be a maskil, and he had no way at that time. He would embarrass his father, embarrass his cousin, the Notabi Yehuda, a Berliner, Chas v'chalima, and he did it on his own. Okay, now, he writes about how much he has suffered. He said, ever since I wrote that volume against the Raphael Cohen, everyone hates me. Everyone wants to torture me. Everyone speaks against me. And he calls them Malshinim. And he says, this is why I called it Kasa da Hasana. So you see, you have two. The man was a genius. Lenin, the man, Reb Shaul Berlin, was a genius. And he calls it Kasa da Hasana. You have two different interpretations. On one hand, simple pshat, fabulous lumdus. I add to the rush. It's like a good meal. Kasa da Hasana. In American language, a steak at Shmulka Bernstein's. Herbie, remember Shmulka's Zichron Levracha? Try to explain to them what a steak meant at Shmulka Bernstein's. Ah, Kasa da Hasana.
I make sure you take your Lipitor then.
Believe me, the more steak you had, the more years off your life, but that's a different story. We have a doctor here. I don't want to overstate the case. Lenny knows medicine better than I do. Yossi? Kasa da Hasana. On that level, fabulous lumdus. The other meaning, kos shel sina, like Har Sinai. Everyone hates me because I attacked but correctly criticized. My lumdus was correct. Reb Raphael Cohen was wrong. Double intenda. Two different meanings. Man was a genius. Then he tells you something else which you wouldn't understand unless you knew the period and have delved into rabbinic literature. Although I have to tell you, not much has changed today. Not much has changed. I'll show you in a second. How did you publish a book? How did you publish a book? Do you have any idea what publishing costs then? Publishing today is one of the few things in life that's infinitely cheaper than it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Type had to be set by hand. Buchstabe. You have no idea what we're talking about. There were experts who, their entire life, Labriot was just setting type. Okay. You needed a fortune of money.
They weren't Jewish either.
Well, some weren't Jewish, and we can show that mistakes were made that way. But by this period, a sefer like this was in Jewish hands. No, how did you get money? Now remember, I have the brisker Rav talking about my cousin, Baron Cohen, the Chevron Rosh Yeshiva. So in one of the biography of Baron Cohen, it's a Haredi biography, so you have to take everything with a grain of salt. But they quote the brisker Rav as saying that anyone who's publishing it is revelable. Anyone who's publishing a sefer thinks a sefer is going to change the world. You know, in other words, what are you, an idiot? You're going to write a new book? Rakevet has a new book. You're going to change the world. Anyone gives a hoot what you think. You understand? And he was telling about Rav Aaron Cohen that he's so excited the sefer is coming out, but the sefer says that the brisker, but Rav Aaron is different. He will be publishing something worthwhile. Now, I don't know if the brisker Rav made that addendum, didn't make the addendum, but it's true, everyone thinks when they're ready to publish a book, their eyes light up, oh, what this book is going to do for the world. Gentlemen, what the book is going to do for the world? 1 out of 100 succeed. How do you cover costs? How do you get money? Now, can anyone tell me what the rabbinic tradition was? They took subscriptions. People, you never saw this in the Haskamot. You can read Haskamot from the 1800s to 1900s. You'll see that they say, the wonderful sefer, I know this person to be a Talmud Chacham, I encourage him to publish, and I want to let him know when the book comes out, I will buy 5 copies. And you can see Svarim, where they actually have Haskamot, where they mention, we'll buy 5 copies and pay 5 ruble a piece for every sefer. That's the way they had money in advance, because no one, they had to have a guarantee, they had to make loans, they have to pay off. You know what the Ridvaz went through? Rabbi Yaakov Dugman, Zev Volovsky, how did he wind up in Chicago? Because he, the Ridvaz of Slutz, published the Yerushalmi in 7 volumes with his Rashi Perish and his Tosfos Perish. You know what I'm talking about, right? The Ridvaz talking 110 years ago. He was so in debt, he started traveling. He wound up in Paris. That's how he meets Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who was growing up in Paris at the time. His father was Rav of the Kahal, of what today is called the Monk Shul. That's where Rav Herzog's father was Rav. At the Adat Yireim, I think it's called, but if anyone corrects me, correct me. He went to London. Ultimately, he comes to America. He's fundraising. Who the heck in America cared about the Yerushalmi? But Shane Rav, a nice-looking rabbi from Europe, a big Talmud Chacham, the Slutsky Rav, when he came to America, the newspapers, the Yiddish papers, called him the greatest European rabbi ever to set foot in America. So then he wound up in Chicago. They made him chief rabbi in Chicago. Right, it didn't work out. But never... No, you see, nothing has changed. Today, what does Art Scroll do? What does the OU do? I was embarrassed. They're selling subscriptions to my forthcoming book. Right or wrong? What are the dedications? Page of honor in honor of the Rebbe. It's no different than what they did 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. Before Art Scroll publishes a book, they have $500,000 in dedications. Take a look. Take a look at the beautiful edition of the OU Kina, the Rav's Kina. Mamish, beautiful, with a new translation and the beautiful Rabbi Lord Sachs, his translation of the prayer book. Look at the dedication in front. It's the Lukstein edition in honor of Rabbi Pascal Lukstein. These people are geniuses. Rabbi Lukstein's congregation is the finest. You know, we don't have a finer Orthodox congregation. What, they have 50 names, 100 names there, whatever it is, you must have $100,000 right on that page alone. So we can't laugh at what they did. What they did is basically what we're doing today, the Schottenstein edition of the Talmud. Kol hakavod to the Schottenstein family, okay? So here's what's fascinating. He cries in the introduction that all these people spoke evil of me, hated me, spoke sina of me, and he says it harmed my ability to publish. I could not raise funds. He said, I tried my best to get subscribers, and I pleaded with people, these are divrei rishonim that I'm publishing, and people malshinim kinegdi spoke about me, malshinei b'seta, whispered behind my back. And he says, what I went through to finally loan, borrow, get the money in order to publish the Sefer, Yasa Yisruni. And very fascinating point, you can see how he is suffering. Then finally at the end, he ends off with a beautiful prayer, now that the Sefer finally will appear, I call upon all the Talmidei Chachamim lishpot ulaharot, meaning value it, look at it, weigh it, decipher it, see if it's good, quote me. And then he says, I know that they will see me favorably, and I pray al hatid for the future, that Hashem, beautiful, Hashem should hoshieni v'ivasheya, and all my illness and all my suffering and all my heartache should not have been in vain. And he prays for Klal Yisrael, for the prat, meaning himself, his family, Hakatan Shaul, the son of Rav Tzvi Hirsch of Berlin. Okay? That is his introduction. Finally, I would call that a preface, but he calls it the Hakdama. Then he has a second introduction, how he came to get the manuscript. Now, I need not tell you, whenever a manuscript appears, where did it come from? You know, when you publish your own book, it's one thing. But suddenly you come up with a manuscript, what are the roots, what are the origins? I need not tell you what's going on today over the Dead Sea Scrolls. You're aware, Yitzchak, what went on in New York with the lawsuit, with the professor from NYU, with the underhand motives and actions, but this is always a problem. How do you suddenly come up with a manuscript? Where is it? Where'd you find it? Then you got to date it. Where was it? Whose hands? Who took it apart? Who saw it? Who deciphered it? You have to give the history. You all know that with every manuscript that comes out today, I remember in my time when the Miris first started appearing, I told you it was revolutionary. It was very hard. I never forget Rav Shmuel Lazer Volk, when we were learning Baba Batra, the Miri, Rav Avram Schreiber, the seminary faculty, Professor Schreiber, put out a Meiri on Baba Batra. Do you recall it was orange cover, very big, the thick, beautiful paper was. And I remember we brought it into class, and we were dealing with a problem, Cheskat HaBatim, and we were wise, Alex. We opened the Meiri, Rebbe, here the Meiri's discussing the problem. And Rav Volk got a starago Meiri, Nishkot HaMeiri, in Kelosh, in Echuk Nishtein HaMeiri, Hein Tvasfa HaMeiri, Val, Von, we didn't have a Meiri in Tels, I'm not looking at a Meiri today. Where did they get a Meiri suddenly? Where did this appear from? Understand? So when you have a manuscript, what goes on, my Talmud just put out a Quintus of the Rashbar, Bitzalel Na'ar, that's his daughter who shows up occasionally on Monday morning for the first part of the Shia. It's a whole story. This is a kid who fed into my class in the 60s, a young kid, a wild kid out of Bangor, Maine. And Baruch Hashem, I had some influence on him. Well, Gon Shebagoinim, you have no idea what he knows. So he just put out a manuscript of the Rashba against Mohammedanism. So you have to understand right away. Yitzchak looks up. I know it's on Yitzchak's mind. What does the Rashbah have to do fighting Islam? Father, you don't know what a machlek there is. Who wrote it? How did it come to the Rashbah? Is it the Rashbah? Isn't it the Rashbah? All right, you have to tell a story. You have to give research. Here he gives an unbelievable story of the manuscript, how he was in Italy, and how he meets this individual that has the manuscript, and how he gets all excited, and he sees Tshuva Karash, and he looks at the manuscript, and he sees the new Tshuva here that had never been published before, and he gets all excited, and he says to the person, sell me the manuscript, I want to publish it. And the person allows him to copy the manuscript, makes a condition, give me 3 years. If in 3 years I don't publish it myself, then you can publish it. And he says, 3 years have gone by, I have every right to publish it. He makes the cheshbon, you know, 392 tshuvot, besamim harosh, and he describes how this manuscript was in the hands, we spoke about it, Rabbi Yitzchak de Molina. There's a whole machloket, whether Yitzchak de Molina existed, didn't exist, and now he is publishing the manuscript. Okay, let me come to the heart of today's shir, although I don't know if we can finish it all. So what have we seen so far? Pardon me with the glasses, I'm at the stage in life where I one day will need a second cataract operation, but the doctor, I'll teach you, I told you, modern Hebrew, they use the word ha'ayin od lo b'sheila. The eye is not yet ripe for the second operation. So I find my eyes shifting, and I say to the doctor, but I have to take off my glasses when I teach. I say, when I want to read something, he says, no, that's okay, that's normal, that's fine. At your age, that is the practice. So considering that this doctor is the only one in the world who studied both with me and my brother, I have confidence in him. He studied Torah with me, and he studied ophthalmology with my brother. So what have we seen so far? We've seen the title page, we've seen the Haskama, we've seen the two introductions. Fine. Where were you people? We're logical. We view ourselves as citizens of the great 21st century. We're enlightened. What are we carrying on here? It's a farce. It's a phony. It's plagiarism. Okay. A lot of Gedolim felt this way. And as I mentioned to you, are you on call, Lenny? What are they bothering you? Never a doctor. A lot of Gedolim felt this way. And that's why I told you the volume was only published twice. Once, originally, then again about 90 years later. Second time it was published, they left out two tshuvot that were too hot for them to handle. We'll go into those tshuvot, not today, but later. And then suddenly in 1983, for the third time, the Besamim Rosh appears. Not only appears, but with a tremendous defense by Rav Reuven Amar, Ayin Mem Aleph Resh, like the chief rabbi Amar, Moroccan family, well-known name Amar. Do you remember who was the famous singer who brought Israeli songs to America? Joe Amar. That's the family, exactly. Joe Amar, Zichrono Levracha, he was an Elachiyid, I want you to know. That man never lost it, and he has wonderful children and grandchildren. I was privileged to meet some of them and to teach some of them. No, this Reuven Amar, Makom, you know the Gemara in Chulin Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, Makom Chinichu Lo Avatav Lehit Gaderbo. What does the Gemara mean? Look, every person who teaches Torah on a high level at times has to feel very depressed. Who am I? What am I? I got so excited Shabbos with my chidushim and the Rav's life with Vilna, you know. Come on. The way I touched up the Gemara in Yevamah, I mean, I don't think you're going to... The chap I did, you know, everyone touches it up with all the halachas, and I saw the musar in it. Then you say to yourself, who are you? What am I, an idiot? I saw the Rav. I have a right to teach. So the Gemara already raises this question in Cholim. That's sign number Aleph. The Gemara says, Makom hinichu lo avotav letyadev. It's a beautiful Gemara. That everyone has a share in Torah Shabbal Peh. And as great as your forebears were, as great as your rebbeim were, they left you a little slot where you can add a chidush. A little slot. But nevertheless, you can add a chidush. You can have a novella. You can have an insight that nobody ever had before you. This is makom, it's a meritic gemara, and this gemara is very comforting. Because it means even little people, Yiftach Badaro, Kishmul Badaro, Marishainim Malachim, Anu B'nei Tumuta, Marishainim B'nei Tumuta, Anu Chamorim, even little people can have a Chiddush. So this is what inspires us, this is what makes us go further, this is what makes us be Mechadesh, this is what makes us write Sfarim, etc., etc. Reuven Amar was upset that everyone dismissed the B'Samen Rosh. And he decided to reissue it and defend the B'Samen Rosh. I regret that he didn't set new type on the whole Sefer. As I showed you, we suffer because it's rabbinic type of the old school when hand type was set, and because it was so expensive, occasionally they combined letters, particularly an Aleph and a Lamed. And it's a little difficult for us to read because we have been ruined, just as your generation has been ruined by art scroll. My generation was ruined already with modern Hebrew black type, and I already grew up where almost every sefer of value was republished and republished beautifully in the nascent state of Israel. Nevertheless, outside of the Sefer proper, everything else is in beautiful, modern, block Hebrew type. What's amazing? Who gives him Haskama? No less an authority than Rav Ovadia Yosef. So here, the very Rav Ovadia, who had so much trouble with the B'Samim Rosh, gives him Haskama. And he writes a pilpul that to show that he's familiar with the B'Samim Rosh. I'll only quote one example, and we'll see this. The B'Samim Rosh reaches the conclusion that it doesn't matter which type of tefillin you put on. Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam. No, I can explain it, we'll deal with it, not for now. Does that make sense halachically? Even the Hasidim, the chutzpah of the Hasidim, they put on two pairs of tefillin. Why am I saying chutzpah, David? Why do we paskin la halacha? Only someone who is a chassid, tzaddik yisod olam, only he is allowed to be machmir and put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin after he put on Rashi tefillin. Every Hasidic kid at the age of 12 and 9 months and 10 months is putting on two pairs of tefillin.
Svardim also.
Svardim, and you have some Svardim who put on two pairs at the same time. I once saw a fundraiser in America. People were lining up to give money just to see the sight of someone wearing two shel rosh and two shayat at the same time. Makom hinich, makom, the Chazal already tell us, makom menachet, there's makom for two pairs of tefillin on the person. Ephraim, thank God for the rotten, evil, vicious nefarious Hasidim. Do you know why? Ah, you're going to have something to tell your wife. Because the KGB experts at point of entry, at every airport, there was one person in charge of religious matters. And that little blonde woman at the Shermantov Airport, if I'm pronouncing it right, in Moscow, she knew that a Jew comes in with two pairs of tefillin. She wasn't smart enough to know that they were both Rashi, and we would keep one and leave one. Follow? But the Hasidim, Baruch Hashem, educated her that a Jew, you see, has to have two pairs of tefillin. So Ephraim, thank God for the Hasidim and the two pairs. But nevertheless, as a Litvish guy, wow. And then along comes the Besamim Rosh. Ribbono Shalom, and if you put on Rabbeinu Tan Tefillin according to the Halacha, you are not Yotzei Tefillin. And you all know the Vilna Gaon. Hold up. You all know the Vilna Gaon. I don't want to go into great detail now. It's not important now. The Vilna Gaon was hysterical. If you're going to be machmir for Rabbeinu Tam, I think the Vilna Gaon listed out 24 different pairs of tefillin you would have to put on to be yotzei. Understand? Rav Scheinberg wears how many pairs of tzitzit? No, that's for Rav Scheinberg. Torah, what's it? Or the Torah R. 18 pairs of tzitzit. Normal people wear one pair alone. It's not Torah. The Malachi Asharim. So Rav Ovadia takes issue with the Summer Rosh. Chas v'chalila. Here he says, if you hold Rashi's correct, Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin are absolutely for you. It's the different order of the Pashiyot. If you hold Rabbeinu Tam is correct, then Rashi's Tefillin are apostle. But to say that they're interchangeable, so but what does Rav Ovadia show by this? Oh, he's Machshir the Summer Rosh. It may not be the Rosh, but it's Lamedus. And he praises Rabbi Reuven Omar, that he wrote a sefer lahaloto al shulchan malachim, and ki kerev habikodet shenim tachal a sefer b'samim rosh, b'milei mal yata di itvei dashinan. And he says, with all our criticisms, but when it has something good, we have to deal with it. And he gives you a reference to the tshuva we spoke about last week in the Yabia Omer. Yes, Nachum, what did you want to say?
It's kind of ironic that the Chafetz Chaim, when they had the forgery of the Yerushalmi,
the Kachim, the Rajina,
that's why he wore Rabbeinu Tam, because that forgery said you should wear Rabbeinu Tam, and they say the Chafetz Chaim started wearing Rabbeinu Tam because he believed that was the...
All I know is in the Seder Hadorot, there's something there with the Rabbeinu Tam. I don't recall exactly, but something where there was Gilui Shechina, and it said the halacha is like Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rav quoted Rav Chaim that this cannot be correct because Gilui Shechina can a heavenly vort cannot paskin a shayla la halacha, and Rav Chaim totally dismissed. That say the Hadarat would seem to advocate that there being a Tam Tefillin not correct.
Now, what
are you talking about? They found the Yigal Yadin's Matzara Tefillin and the Dead Sea Tefillin. They found two pairs of Tefillin within a few years of each other. According to the carbon tests, the Tefillin were about 2,100, 200 years old. They opened them up. This was famous research. And one was Rabbeinu Tam, one was Rashi. And I want you to know, I'll come back to it tomorrow perhaps, or tomorrow then. Anyway, I want you to know that in my first Shtela, and you know, I didn't want to, what's a spoiltot? The rabbi spoke to, so he gets the impression I'm opposed to the rabbi, so why am I telling my students, you don't come in Aliyah, go into the rabbinate? But I'm not an idiot. We need Rabbanim. It's a difficult profession, but YU is doing its best to prepare you for it. So in my first Shtela, I had one Balabas, he died recently, Professor Moshe Greenberg. Do you recognize the name? Zichrono Levracha. So Moshe Greenberg was the son of Simon Greenberg. Simon Greenberg was the vice chancellor of the seminary, had been rabbi of Har Zion in Philadelphia. And they were absolutely orthopraxed, but not orthodox. So one Shabbos I was speaking, you know, I was a kid, I didn't know, I knew a little bit, all right, I have to admit, I knew a little bit, I was all of 23, I knew a little bit, and I was talking about the conservative and the orthodox and halacha, and so Moshe Greenberg argues with me, and he says, and this argument continued, I remember an hour after Avdallah, people were standing around listening to us go, and Moshe Greenberg says to me, we know more than the Vilna Gaon today. And he says, I'll give you an example. And Moshe Greenberg says to me, what type of tefillin do you put on? I said, well, what kind of question? I put on Rashi. You are not Yotzei tefillin. I put on only Rabbeinu Tam. And at that point, they had only found the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. And he says to me, did the Vilna Gaon have this? We know more today. And this is the historic process of how the halacha develops. And you know, years later, when it became clear that there was another pair, that ancient Rashi, I wanted to ask Moshe Greenberg what happened that he's put on, and he became Hasidish or what. But I have to say, he was a very nice individual, don't misunderstand me, but he was not orthodox. He was orthoprax, 100%. Shomer Mitzvah, his father was Shomer Mitzvah, but in doctrine, but this was the Machlokes. And this is exactly what he said to me. Now, in the India.
It's much older. Shutman HaShemayim says that the Machlokes goes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and
the Malach. So Shutman HaShemayim, that's something that's quoted in Seder HaDorot. There's something to that effect. You have to look at it. I haven't looked at it in years, but it's the same thought. The same thought.
Do you think that Saifun would have quoted the Sefer HaDorot?
I don't know if Saifun would.
He wrote a book that was written.
Yeah, but the Seder Dor was a Gadol Shel Rabbi Chiel Halperin, was the Minska Rav, and he was quoting traditions. After all, he was quoting traditions, but I'm telling you, Rav Chaim dismissed it. So you're telling me Professor Zeitlin and Rav Chaim had something in common. They both would have dismissed the Sefer Torah. All right, maybe you're right, I don't know. But that's what I heard from the Rav many, many times. Now, he writes a beautiful Hakdama with a beautiful history. The whole story of everything I've told you about was published in 1793. It was published in 1881 again. Two tshuvot were left out, the one about committing suicide and the one about, put it into modern terminology, being driven on Shabbat in a wagon, in a coach, in a bus, in a train, if we put it into modern terminology. And he writes about how he got the Sefer. And so many people have attacked the Sefer. And he says, and this is one of the great defenses. Look, the Sefer was in the hands of Yitzchak de Molina, whoever that happens to be. The chances are he never existed. But the name, there are similar names at the time of the Beis Yosef. So, of course, one of the big defenses that any changes that were made in the original manuscript were made by the person who copied it. And the person who copied it, because no one had the original manuscript. In other words, even Rav Shaul Berlin does not claim he had the original manuscript. He claims he was able to copy the manuscript that was in the hands of that Italian merchant whom he met in Italy. But no one had the original manuscript. So we're talking about a copy of a copy. And who knows if Yitzchak de Molina did not make changes. Then he goes in to those who criticize the Sefer. But he says, even if you look at those who criticize, nevertheless, they were Gedolei Yisrael who accepted the Sefer. And he quotes the Chida, we're talking about Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, who certainly had a feel for manuscripts. You know what his profession was, right? He was a Shaddah. What is a Shaddah? Shliach d'Rabbanan. In our language, it's someone who raises money for an institution in Israel. Shadarim has always been a respectable occupation. There's an entire major volume or two volumes the history of Shadarim by Avram Yari. Are you familiar with it? That's the individual, a great chokes, a Chorno Lebracha, Mosad Rav Kook, a fabulous volume. I remember a Bernard Revel graduate school, someone gave a course on the history of Shlichim, Feretz Yisrael, raising money. When I grew a little older, I saw that the whole course was lifted from Avram Yari's research. He put out on Simchas Torah, there's the classic volume that he put out on Simchas Torah as well. That's the person we're talking about. So the Chiddah who traveled all over and saw manuscripts, he feels the book is correct. He quotes the Or Sameach. He gives you a source where the Or Sameach quotes the Besam and Rosh and does not make any negative comment. And he says, if the Chiddah and the Or Sameach can quote the Besam and Rosh, then I have to go out and defend him. How can you attack someone who was such a Talmud Chacham, Chas v'Chalila, that he should falsify sources and falsify a sefer that is attributed to Rishonim Kamalachim? I have to go out and defend him. And then begins the kuntris of defense. I have to tell you honestly, it is not convincing to someone who has been trained scientifically, but it's a fabulous attempt to defend Rav Shaul Berlin. First of all, he makes a simple point. How many Svarim came out that were put into Cherem and later became classic? Nor do I have to go any further than the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam. Just think for one moment, there is no one in this room that a day does not go by that you have not consulted the Mishneh Torah. When we studied with the Rav, we brought two Svarim to class. The Gemara we were learning, and the Rambam, the Mishneh Torah on that Gemara. We couldn't bring the whole Rambam, but if we were learning for the sake of argument, Baba Kama, you brought Nezikin. You follow? You brought whatever you were learning condition, you brought Isha. Well, but the Mishneh Torah is the classic example of Rishonim. The books were burned in public. Is the Rambam crazy? What's the matter with him? They went after the philosophy in the first part of the Rambam, right or wrong. They went after Yisodei HaTorah. They went after the philosophy. They went after Danny, the whole chutzpah that you think, the Rambam's introduction that you can do away with all of Torah Shebaal Peh, and all that someone will have to do is open a Chumash and open a Rambam, and that's it. And he says, tremendous opposition. Then he takes the Pre-Chadash. You all know that when the Pre-Chadash came out, they burned the books for Parchesia, because the Pre-Chadash differed with the Beis Yosef. These were different traditions in Psak. Rav Ovadia Yosef, the Iraqi Psak versus the Moroccan Psak. You have right now opposition, which way to go? Right now, Gaon b'Yisrael comes out with a new approach. No, then he goes into, who mentioned the Shabtayistim? He goes into Rav Yehonatan Eibshutz, how they burned his books in public. And then, this of course is for the modern Torah world that follows Art Scroll, I challenge Art Scroll. Let the call go out from here, clarion call and clear. Let us see a biography and Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato on the Ramchal. My dear students, Mipivanu Chayim, Meimavanu Shotin, who doesn't learn Mesilat Yesharim? Who doesn't climb the ladder with Mesilat Yesharim? Who doesn't cry with Mesilat Yesharim? Who doesn't suffer sleepless nights because of Mesilat Yesharim? And when you tell, when they, Yitzchak, they just asked me from Florida, who is that Rabbi Reuben that is always the Sitra Acher? You're always taking the different point. Yitzchak, I said to them, Rabbi Reuben declared Rav Shobel, wait till you know what I have tomorrow, Rav Shola Lieberman. It's unbelievable. But relax yourself. To tell the story of the... I'm not telling you what I'm calling you, I'm telling you what they believe. From hearing you and share that the Ramchal, you don't have sleepless nights from the Ramchal, Mesilat Yesharim, Kedusha. All right, the Rabachim Pakuda. Okay. Relax. Gentlemen, I know that...
He's like
someone could end the world. The Mesilat Yesharim, you're all too kind. The real person of Mesilat Yesharim is that the Chayshish, there's an influence of Catholicism in there, the asceticism, and that is not healthy. So that's the real
wrong.
That's the real critique.
The
I know.
Say
the say that no not Masilda say that doesn't matter.
Gentlemen,
it doesn't matter. What matters is I challenge you. Do you know what I'm saying? Enough. The Masilta Shon wrote he was part of the Lutzato family. He was enlightened. He was a YU graduate. He wrote plays. He wrote in Latin Hebrew. And this same Ramchal becomes the most important Musa Sefer in any yeshiva in the world today. Every youngster in the world when I was a kid. And then I didn't know Hebrew that when I was 13. So I had Mordechai Kaplan's translation and I cut out the introduction. I shouldn't see Mordechai Kaplan's name. And on the book I pasted a tape over it, white tape. I shouldn't see Mordechai Kaplan's name. Believe me, I didn't do the right thing. If you're using it, use it. If you don't use it, don't use it. But don't start cutting out pages and burning them. But I was influenced by what happened with his Siddha. Gentlemen, nothing compares to this other example he comes up with. Rav Avram Danzig, the Chochmat Adam, the Chaye Adam, what they did to that poor Vilna Jew. Michael, do you know why? He was a shopkeeper. He had a grocery store. He worked for a living. He helped his wife. She had children. He was in the store every day. And they dismissed him. Who the heck is he? A shopkeeper. A grocery man. What the heck does he know? And they just, they laughed at him. Don't pay attention to him. And the Chaye Adam became, until the Mishnah Brura, the most important posek for Litvish jury. There was one yahrzeit shiur the Rav gave. You can't imagine what the Rav was like in the 50s and in the prime of life and the si hakoach, the prime of ability. And the Rav began a shiur. This little grocery man in Vilna, Paskin, so it had to do with Rosh Chodesh, with Aleva Yavo, and he based a 5-hour shiur on that little paragraph. Those little sentences in the Chaye Adam. And I remember Rabbi Luchstein, when we had him in homiletics, the great Rabbi Joseph H. Luchstein, knowing, and Rabbi Luchstein said, I have to admit, no one can equal the oratorical ability of the Rav. We can't equal him. We can only hope to be inspired by him. How he could take a little incident with a shopkeeper in Vilna and capture the entire audience and build such a magnificent Sheyua. You know? And he gives more. Anyway, you get the feeling. How do you criticize the Besamim Rosh? It follows in the great tradition, beginning with the Rambam, coming down to the Chaye Adam, and anyone criticizing him, you have to understand that one day he will be totally accepted, and in this edition that I am issuing with a commentary on the Besamim Rosh, he wrote a commentary on the Kasa Dachasana and the Besamim Rosh, which appears in back and black letters, I will show you that he is accurate, honest, Elech, reliable, and you can depend upon him. And he's amazing here with his knowledge. He quotes the Chatam Sofer, how the Chatam Sofer calls him Kisvei Rosh, Kisvei, lies of the Rosh. Remember, I showed you the Chatam Sofer, not Kitvei HaRosh, but Kisvei HaRosh, the lies of the Rosh. And he quotes the Minchat HaLaza. Who is the Minchat HaLaza? We're talking here about the Munchat Sherav, Reb Lazer Shapiro, the great Munchat Sherav. We're talking about a Gong Shebegainim, the Posik Mufak of Hungarian Jewry, and he quotes him, how he quotes the Chatam Sofer, the Minchat HaLaza, how he makes fun of the Besamim Rosh, and then he says, quotes him elsewhere, where the Minchat Laza is quoting the Besamim Rosh Lahalacha. And Reuven Amar goes crazy, he says, when he doesn't need the Besamim Rosh and he differs with him, he calls him Kisvei HaRosh. He emulates and follows and paraphrases the Chatam Sofer. But where he needs the Besamim Rosh, suddenly he quotes him in dignity. And here is Rav Reuven Amar, a Sfadik youngster in Jerusalem, accusing the great Minchat Lazan, as the Hungarians say, of being two-faced. And he is unbelievable in this introduction and in his defense. So let me reiterate, we'll finish up the introduction next week, we can do it quickly, and then we're going to actually go into the tshuva per se. My dear students, it's a very fascinating topic. Rav Shaul Berlin, caught between two worlds, doesn't have a yeshiva university. It's not as fortunate as you are. Today you have Satmar renegades studying in YU, and they tell me even studying in Yeshivat Chovevei Torah. I know in Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, long after I got my degrees there, I met students, Satmar renegades. All right. They were upset. They didn't feel at ease. They were fenced in. But they had where to go. They could breathe fresh air. The Besamim Rosh did not have that alternative. So you look at the Noda Behuda's letter, raises the entire issue, what is a Haskama worth when no one who is someone important, someone who really is into learning, how do you have time? How do you have time to read all this? I comment on the contemporary Gedolim. Everyone goes to them for a bracha. What is Chassidic Rebbeim? They take kids from all over the world to visit Rabbi Yoshua, to visit Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Ribbono Shel Olam. Gadol, who has time? I don't know. I must know nothing because I know I'm always learning, always trying to do things, always trying to accomplish. But I'm told you go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he's busy learning and he mumbles. Chazak ve'ematz, whatever he's mumbling, Yashikaya, Chakatzlacha, but he's learning. Who has time? So he wrote a beautiful letter to Sher Besari, my relative. Sher Besari means a cousin, basically. My relative. All right? But believe me, the Noda Behuda is not going to write a letter to Aaron Rakefet. Right or wrong? Mendel, did you ever get a letter from the Noda Behuda? Okay, but he wrote a letter to Rav Shaul Berlin. So it's an interesting question. What I told you about Rav Kook is mamish. I think the year was 1927, if I recall correctly. And who could read Hebrew in Brooklyn? So Reverend Brooklyn, he was so smart. He published the letter, and he must have sold 100 copies of that book $25 a copy, 1927 money, he was a millionaire. Take a look, I got a letter from Remich HaBacham to come in a brief. From Rav Kook, from Yerushalayim. Oh, Rebbe, ich will kaufen the safe, ich will haben bei mir ein Stuhl as a safe. I want to buy the safe, I want to have a copy of it in my house. Who read it? Who understood it? But wow, I got a letter from Rav Kook. Okay. By the way, that's a lesson that everyone should know. If you become a famous Rav, when you have a letterhead, be careful who you're writing to, because you can write to a guy, dear Rabbi so-and-so, I think you're an apikoros, I think you've gone off the path, I think you've become conservative, I think you don't know what you're talking about when you permit women to this, that, the other thing, etc. Count them for a minion. Sincerely, your Rebbe who mourns for a lost student, you sign it, and he puts it in, oh, I got a letter from Yeshiva University in Israel. Take a look. Okay. His father's haskamah, of course, doesn't count. Einav meyidal beno, that the father says, my son is a big Talmud Chacham, I told you on Shabbos, and I'm absolutely told you the truth. I didn't pull punches. When the Rav came to America, I know from eyewitnesses, I always was a curious, inquisitive little kid. And I used to bother those old-timers day and night. I didn't let them free. I used to hang on to Rabbi Melech Shachter like a scab. And then he told me. They were laughing. The Rav is coming to America. Rabbi Moshe's been hacking ahead. Mein Zundagon. I think I say it in the movie. I think in the documentary it's there. Mein Zundagon. What? When? Where? Clean-shaven guy standing on the boat. Remember what I told you? Come on. Cut it out, Rebbe. It's your son. You're prejudiced. Oh, when the Rav opened his mouth, they were slaughtered on the spot. But not because of what the father said. Ain av meyid al beno. Because of what the son was able to produce. So, you got to dismiss it. Rav Reuven Amar, Svadik young man, felt bad for this Ashkenazic person. He doesn't really understand. I told you this 3 weeks ago. He didn't really understand what was happening then. The Svadik world was never caught up with Moshe Mendelssohn. The Svadik world was never caught up with the Rishon Emet of Wesley of Weisel. A Svadik individual was never caught up with that whole conflict. They stepped out of the ghetto in the 20th century. Then they came to Israel, and here they were caught up with real problems, not theological, but simply Ben-Gurion gave the word, they cut the payas off, they broke the necks of chickens, Torah's left in the ghetto, it's a new world here. That was, and by the way, this is not false. We now have memoir literature, both people who became from later, and both people who are not from until today. But the memoir literature speaks for itself. And one thing the Mossad taught me, people will always see things differently. It's not that you're lying. It's just we're all human beings. But when you hear testimony, when people come back from Russia and tell you what's happening in the refusnik community, this is what I was taught. You take their testimony, put it one on top of another. Where it corresponds, believe it. Where it doesn't correspond, wait until you get more evidence. You can't be sure. And this is exactly it. But Rav Reuven Amar couldn't understand all that was happening. And he went to defend Rav Shoberlin. And what an introduction. When it was printed, how it was printed, what they left out, who criticized it, who praised it. The Minchat Lazer, those words are very sharp. When he needed the Besamer Rosh, Besamer Rosh was king. When he didn't need him, and differed, Kizvei Rosh. The list of the Svarim that were put into Cherem, that is fascinating.
Give the list again.
You can... The Pri Chadash, Rabbi Yonatan Epshutz, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the Chaye Yadam. Right, there are probably many more from you can come up with. No. There are probably many more from you can come up with.
Why was the Pri Chadash?
Because he had a totally different tradition of Pesach against the Beit Yosef. And it was overwhelming that suddenly a Sfadik Rav is going to come and upset the Beit Yosef, who was accepted by his Kimolein Kol Yisrael. We'll talk about this in months to come, not yet. Okay, and we dedicated this year in memory of Rabbi Dr. Aaron Bat. Breaks my heart, my generation. Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Mamish Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, a very fascinating Sheirua dealing with the Halachic Committee on Jewish Law and dealing with actual examples of what they paskined. And you'll see and hear with your own ears the most famous response of all, the one that permits driving to the synagogue on Shabbat. Let me just see. I want to ask for help here. If anyone has contact with Englewood, New Jersey, anyone in the Kollel or anyone in Torah Shraga, let me know. I found in my shul this sitter next to the Sheamus. It means someone left it and they're ready to throw it out. I opened it. It's David Carmel. If I'm not mistaken, David Carmel lives in Englewood. And it makes sense that it would have been left in Ohel Rivka because he has an apartment near the shul, and I would like to get it back to him if I can, to be mekayem the mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda. Secondly, this is from 2.5 years ago, an article in the New York Times. If anyone is interested, the article was just given to me on a Sefer Torah that was rescued in Poland and ultimately refurbished, and it winds up in New York City. A beautiful article and how they got the Sefer Torah and about the priest who was born Jewish.
There's been other articles since then. It's a very mother story.
It's what? It's very what?
The guy, they claim that they now the guy, they don't even know where he's getting the Sefer Torah. He's claiming he's trying to go to the Sefer Torah.
1 second. And this is the guy I heard something. Yolis. Yolis.
Yeah,
right,
I don't know.
So you mean, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidalia. Okay, anyone from a